Thanks, guys. Tim, alcoholic.
Tim.
I like to be symmetrical. So we're on page 51, We Agnostics, first paragraph. Before we get started tonight, tonight's topic is going to be a little bit more of the spiritual realm. So I thought it was apropos that we start out with what's commonly done in a lot of big book presentations, stylistically the same as this, is the set-aside prayer. Many different versions of it. This just happens to be one of them. So, you know, you can Google it. You can get other people's version of it. But this is one that sort of resonated with me. I'll make copies for the future because not me, but somebody took the time that, and after I read the prayer, you'll kind of see what I'm talking about. But they highlighted in the big book various lines which relate to the prayer. So they've culled out some spots in the big book which had similar messages. Okay, so we'll do 30 seconds of a little quiet time, get our minds wrapped around where we're going to go, and then I'll read the set-aside prayer and we'll get going. Again, we're on page 51. All right, couple of seconds of quiet. God, please set aside everything I think I know about myself, the 12 steps, this book, the meetings, my disease, and you, God, so I may have an open mind and a new experience with all these things. Please let me see the truth. Amen. Okay, first paragraph 51. This world of ours has made more material progress in the last century than in all the millenniums which went before. Almost everyone knows the reason. Students of ancient history tell us that the intellect of men in those days was equal to the best of today. Yet, in ancient times, material progress was painfully slow. The spirit of modern scientific inquiry, research, and invention was almost unknown. In the realm of the material, men's minds were fettered by superstition, tradition, and all sorts of fixed ideas. That's closed-mindedness. Some of the contemporaries of Columbus thought a round earth preposterous. Others came near putting Galileo to death for his astronomical heresies. We asked ourselves this: are not some of us just as biased and unreasonable about the realm of the spirit as were the ancients about the realm of the material? Even in the present century, American newspapers were afraid to print an account of the Wright brothers' first successful flight at Kitty Hawk. Had not all efforts at flight failed before? Did not Professor Langley's flying machine go to the bottom of the Potomac River? Was it not true that the best mathematical minds had proved man could never fly? Had not people said God had reserved this privilege to the birds? Only 30 years later, the conquest of the air was almost an old story, and airplane travel was in full swing. But in most fields, our generation has witnessed complete liberation of our thinking. Show any longshoreman a Sunday supplement describing a proposal to explore the moon by means of a rocket, and he will say, "I bet they do it. Maybe not so long either." Is not our age characterized by the ease with which we discard old ideas for new, by the complete readiness with which we throw away the theory or gadget which does not work for something new which does? So I think here the big book author is making the point that you can choose to believe. You can make a choice to believe. It's within your power. We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems this same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution to these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was. So bedevilments are the torments, the mental torments that we go through. And the point that they're making there is just because you see proof of something via a newsreel does not mean that you can't choose a path which will remove all of these things which they've listed as negatives. Fear, uselessness, unhappiness, not being of value to other people, of real help. Can't control our emotional natures. We can choose to get those things under control via belief. When we saw others solve their problems, remember on page 45, what did we see? Singular problem, now it's plural. Once we use the program to solve our problem, which is alcohol, it then solves all of our problems, right? So when we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, those are capitalized, the same as saying higher power, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. The Wright brothers' almost childish faith, also meaning belief, right? The Wright brothers' almost childish faith that they could build a machine which would fly was the mainspring of their accomplishment. Without that, nothing could have happened. Without what? Belief. We agnostics, those without knowledge, and atheists, those who do not believe, were sticking to the idea that self-sufficiency would solve our problems. Selfish self-centeredness does not work. Self-will will not work with the real alcoholic on alcohol. When others showed us that God's sufficiency worked with them, we began to feel like those who had insisted the rights would never fly. Logic is great stuff. We liked it. We still like it. It is not by chance we were given the power to reason, to examine the evidence of our senses, and to draw conclusions. That is one of man's magnificent attributes. We agnostically inclined would not feel satisfied with a proposal which does not lend itself to reasonable approach and interpretation. Hence, we are at pains to tell why we think our present faith is reasonable, why we think it more sane and logical to believe than not to believe, why we say our former thinking was soft and mushy when we threw up our hands in doubt and said, we don't know. That's what an agnostic would say. I don't know. I am without knowledge. When we became alcoholics, this is important now, crushed by a self-imposed crisis, that's a bottom, we could not postpone or evade. There's the gift of desperation. We're forced into it. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What was our choice to be? Arrived at this point, we were squarely confronted with the question of faith. We couldn't duck the issue. Some of us had already walked far over the bridge of reason, capital B, capital R, implying that it is on the journey of spirituality, even though we're talking about the person who's looking to have proof, reason through, logically go through the whole process to figure out if there is a deity. The big book authors are making the point that is a spiritual journey nonetheless, even if they deny it. Let's do that sentence again. Some of us had already walked far over the bridge of reason toward the desired shore of faith. The outlines and the promise of the new land had brought luster to tired eyes and fresh courage to flagging spirits. Friendly hands had stretched out in welcome. We were grateful that reason, capital R, had brought us so far. But somehow we couldn't quite step ashore. Perhaps we had been leaning too heavily on reason that last mile, and we did not like to lose our support. Why? Fear. Fear is the reason we do not let go and make the choice to have belief. That was natural, but let us think a little more closely. Without knowing it, had we not been brought to where we stood by a certain kind of faith? For did we not believe in our own reasoning? Did we not have confidence in our ability to think? What was that but a sort of faith? Yes, we had been faithful, abjectly faithful, to the God of reason. So in one way or another, we discovered that faith had been involved all the time! Exclamation point. So no matter what the person says standing next to you, everybody's on a spiritual journey. We found, too, that we had been worshipers. What a state of mental goose flesh that used to bring on. Had we not variously worshipped people, sentiment, things, money, and ourselves? And then, with a better motive, had we not worshipfully beheld the sunset, the sea, or a flower? Who of us had not loved something or somebody? How much did these feelings, these loves, these worships have to do with pure reason? Little or nothing, we saw at last. Were not these things the tissue out of which our lives were constructed? Did not these feelings, after all, determine the course of our existence? It was impossible to say we had no capacity for faith or love or worship. In one form or another, we had been living by faith and little else. Imagine life without faith. Were nothing left but pure reason, it wouldn't be life. But we believed in life. Of course we did. We could not prove life in the sense that you could prove a straight line is the shortest distance between two points. Yet, there it was. Could we still say the whole thing was nothing but a mass of electrons created out of nothing, meaning nothing, whirling on to a destiny of nothingness? Of course we couldn't. The electrons themselves seemed more intelligent than that. At least so the chemist said. Hence we saw that reason isn't everything. Neither is reason, as most of us use it, entirely dependable, though it emanate from our best minds. What about people who proved that man could never fly? Yet we had been seeing another kind of flight, a spiritual liberation from this world, people who rose above their problems, arose above their problems. It's different perspective. Doesn't mean the problem went away. You could still have a DWI and court is next year, but you can rise above the problem. Court is still next year. It's a perspective change. It's based on faith. It's a psychic change. It's how I look at it now. They said God made these things possible, and we only smiled. We had seen spiritual release, but liked to tell ourselves it wasn't true. Actually, we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every, meaning all, man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or other, it is there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and the miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup, DNA, just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly But he was there. He was as much a fact as we were. We found the great reality, capital G, capital R, deep down within us. In the last analysis, it is only there that he may be found. It was so with us. So when we say in the program, it's an inside job, that's where it is. It's inside you. You are the carrier of it. We can only clear the ground a bit if our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, enables you to think honestly, encourages you to search diligently within yourself. Then, if you wish, meaning choice, you can join us on the broad highway, the spiritual journey. With this attitude, you cannot fail. Zero failures. With this attitude, you cannot fail. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you. In other words, it was there all the time. It was in your subconscious. You become aware of it now. In this book, you will read the experience of a man who thought he was an atheist. His story is so interesting that some of it should be told now. His change of heart was dramatic, convincing, and moving. Our friend was a minister's son. And they're, of course, they're here, they're talking about Fitzmaio. We talked about in the doctor's opinion. He's actually listed on Roman numeral page 31XXI. And he's the guy that was hiding out in the barn. And they eventually found him. He was thinking about committing suicide. And so it's Fitzmaio. And his story's in the big book here. It's on page 208, Our Southern Friend. Fitzmaio, Our Southern Friend. He attended church school, where he became rebellious at what he thought an overdose of religious education. For years thereafter, he was dogged by trouble and frustration. Business failure, insanity, fatal illness, suicide. These calamities in his immediate family embittered and depressed him. Post-war disillusionment, ever more serious alcoholism, impending mental and physical collapse brought him to the point of self-destruction, meaning suicide. One night, when confined in a hospital, Towns Hospital, he was approached by an alcoholic, Bill Wilson, who had known a spiritual experience. Our friend's gorge rose as he bitterly cried out, "If there is a God, he certainly hasn't done anything for me." But later, alone in his room, he asked himself this question: is it possible that all the religious people I have known are wrong? While pondering this answer, he felt as though he lived in hell. Then a thunderbolt, a great thought came. It crowded out all else. Who are you to say there is no God? This man recounts that he tumbled out of bed to his knees. In a few seconds, he was overwhelmed by a conviction of the presence of God. This is a spiritual experience. It poured over and through him with the certainty and majesty of a great tide at flood. The barriers he had built through the years were swept away. He stood in the presence of infinite power and love. He had stepped from bridge to shore. So he was an atheist. He was on the bridge too. For the first time, he lived in conscious companionship with his Creator. Thus was our friend's cornerstone fixed in place. No later vicissitude has shaken it. His alcoholic problem was taken away. That very night, years ago, it disappeared. Save for a few brief moments of temptation, the thought of drink has never returned. And at such times, a great revulsion has risen up in him. Seemingly, he could not drink even if he would. God had restored his sanity. So he's recovered. What has he recovered from? A seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Big book says it quite often, right? What is this but a miracle of healing? Yet its elements are simple. Circumstances made him willing to believe. His bottom made him willing to believe. Which is really steps one and two. He humbly offered himself to his maker. Then he knew that was step three. just listed steps 1, 2, and 3 in those two sentences. Even so has God restored us all to our right minds. To this man, the revelation was sudden. Some of us grow into it more slowly, but he has come to all who have honestly sought him. When we drew near to him, he disclosed himself to us. I'm going to stop there tonight.